That gets us started in fine style. The Crusaders, at the time this was recorded, they were called the Jazz Crusaders, with a tune called Trance Dance. It's from their 1966 album, the Festival Album, that was recorded live at the Newport and Pacific Jazz Festivals. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and quite a lot of ground to cover today. Let's see if we can do it all. I'm not promising that we can do it all. I'm just saying, let's see if we can do it all. Mostly, they are. I'm going to be doing a lot of how do it observations and things that we should ponder. As you know, today begins the hearing in Washington for the U.S. Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh. And it's already started off with a bang, lots of protesting and whatnot in the chambers as the proceedings begin. But as I would tell you in a minute, I think this thing is done. It's a done deal, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But what I first want to talk about is the stuff that was left over from last Friday, and I titled it A Regrettable Slight in Detroit. Nation of Islam leader Minister Louis Farrakhan was among many dignitaries and notables attending Queen of Soul Aretha Franklin's homegoing last Friday. He was seated in the front row alongside former President Bill Clinton, civil rights leaders, the Reverend Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, who delivered their panegyrics and apparently did a good job of it, at least from the reaction of the crowd. But Minister Farrakhan did not speak. And it caused me to wonder why. Now, whatever people think about Minister Farrakhan is not important here at the moment. The fact is, if an invitation is to be extended to a person of that station, that caliber, whatever it is you think, what people think is not important. The fact is that he didn't just drop by on a whim. He was invited. And he was invited because he and the Nation of Islam were well known to Aretha Franklin. They had been involved together in many local civil rights kind of initiatives. And so it seemed that somebody felt it appropriate to invite Minister Farrakhan. Now, manners, just basic manners, would have you think that in as much as he's there, he's in the front row seat, that he would be invited to speak, or that he had something to say, unless he expressly wished not to speak. Bill Clinton spoke. Bill Clinton spoke. Jesse Jackson spoke. Al Sharpton spoke. Many others spoke, but none of the caliber of Minister Farrakhan. Now, I am not pushing any, line or the other. I'm saying that it occurred to me that it was very noticeable that Minister Farrakhan either did not speak of his own volition or was not allowed to speak, was not invited to speak. And the reason I raise this is to get at the root of something that has been plaguing the African-American community and certainly the African-American religious community for a very long time. It wasn't lost on me that this is a Baptist church. And we had that minister who embarrassed himself and embarrassed the Baptist church community with his long, completely irrelevant talk, lecture, which was totally out of place. But here was a pristine moment to close ranks in a way. Nobody's asking you to become a Muslim. Just simply exercise good manners. And invited Bill Clinton. I mean, that's the I mean, who can't you invite if you invite Bill Clinton to speak? Here's a man, whatever people believe, whatever this thought about Minister Farrakhan, he and his organization are vital parts of many, many communities across this country. He is well regarded outside of the United States as well. But we don't have to, I don't have to create credentials for Minister Farrakhan. I'm just saying that it's just on the basis of good manners. You don't invite somebody of that ilk who in turn agrees to come. He set aside every possible objection you can have. I'm Muslim, you're Christian, but that's okay. I'm in the Baptist church. All right. He's in the company of people who are there for the purpose of elevating a member of the community who had been in many ways vital to Black communities all across this country. And it really bothered me to see him sitting there for the entire ceremony and not speaking. That bothered me. It says that the African-American community has, especially those in leadership positions within religious organizations and community-based organizations, have not yet grown up. They have not yet understood the language of diplomacy in service of the community. You don't fight any kind of fight at a moment like that. It is to bring people together. Aretha Franklin is bringing people together. That's what the service was all about. In all these different ways that she touched people's lives, everybody could agree at that moment that Aretha was the center of a lot of activities relating to promoting the welfare of Black and brown communities all over the country and even all over the world. So in that sense, her life's work was perfectly compatible. But if you're going to tell me that Bill Clinton could come into a church a black church. And be given the task of telling everybody and via television, telling people all over the world what a great person Aretha Franklin was. I don't understand why Minister Farrakhan was not allowed to speak or chose not to speak. And I suspect it had to do with him not wanting to cause trouble, which means that the Christian church, you heard that, Christian church has not yet grown up. It has not yet overcome its prejudices, which have contributed to fractional fights within the community, divisions within the community. And perhaps it was that Minister Farrakhan decided not to create a scene by just sitting low, laying low, and letting the proceedings continue as he observed. I felt terrible about that. And I felt terrible about it because there's so much work to do within these besieged communities. We can ill afford to marginalize leaders who, in their own right, have legitimate constituencies, and they're not flash in the pan type leaders. They have been doing their work for decades. And I felt sad that at that moment in time, I mean, they're sitting on the stage and they're looking down at the casket of Aretha Franklin. And yet there's still so much division. There's so much hard feelings based on what? So I'm hoping that we could learn the answer to the question, why did Minister Farrakhan not speak at the homegoing service of Aretha Franklin? I considered it a great omission. I considered it, if it were the case, that that was a deliberate decision. And it was a very bad decision, an ugly decision. And if it is the case that Minister Farrakhan himself decided that he doesn't want to create any waves, so he would lay low, it still comes down to the question of not wanting to cause ripples between his Muslim group and the Christian group, when all they should understand is that the thing they have in common is that they are oppressed. They are an oppressed group together. I just thought I would make a note of that. But it seemed to be so out there. It seemed to be so obvious that there's something wrong there. And it should have been corrected. It should have been amended so as to conform with the spirit of Aretha Franklin and also with the evident need we have to really close ranks and to support each other. It was a terrible thing, I think, a great omission. Well, for yet another year, more than a million people showed up on Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn on Labor Day to have a good time celebrating Caribbean culture and heritage. For yet another year, organizers of the West Indian Carnival would like revelers to eat up, drink up, jump up, and go home. And repeat next year. No politics. This has been a pet peeve of mine for many, many years. And I don't want to be so egotistical as to think that my thoughts should, supersede the desires of more than 1 million people to have a good time. But I would like them to consider this. While you're having a good time, you are being assaulted, both in the United States and in the Caribbean, by policies that do not promote you, that oppress you. And you have 1 million plus people showing up in one place on one day. There's no agenda. I mean, it's good to have a good time. I'm not trying to be a wet blanket here. I grew up in the Caribbean. I understand it. But we should be thinking strategically at this point in our existence. We should be thinking, how could we use the opportunity to advance propositions or bills or legislation that could help us? How could we do that? How do we mobilize in a situation? I mean, we're surrounded by people. The very people that many of us say we are interested in helping. It is not about just singing and dancing and eating food and having a good time, and then you fold up your tent and go home. This is not to happen anymore. Somewhere in the middle of all of this festivities should be some purposeful work being done to advance the cause. For many things. The party is in Crown Heights. You know, I've discussed Crown Heights for a long, long time. Schools are closing in Crown Heights. You have substandard education in Crown Heights, and most of these are Caribbean children. Is there no, not even a little bit of effort that could be made to drive the point home, to get signatures going, to get some kind of proposition going to put before the city council? So that at the end of the day, when people start withdrawing and going home, all that is left is evidence that they had a good time. This has been going on now for many, many years. A similar, well, actually, the carnival in Brooklyn is the outgrowth of the carnival that started in Harlem. So we have many years of exposure to the Caribbean community to bring it together. When it started was in the time of Marcus Garvey. And Marcus Garvey was good, he liked the idea of having a good time too. But this was a very political piece of work to do. In the middle of all the jumping up and in all the fun, You get some work done. But I will tell you what will happen. And then people get mad. But I've been saying this for years. The jumping up carnival will be used by the city. The city would take it over because it is tremendously profitable. Millions and millions of dollars are made that day. Right now, it's, mostly ordinary people, street vendors, and so forth. But the city will take that over and regulate it. Since people aren't paying attention, the city will take it over. The city will move to own the carnival as an extension of the tourism industry in the city of New York. No other event entices more than 1 million people to show up in the same place, in the city of New York or any place else. That's money. That's hotels. That's cab fare. That's restaurants. The city will take it over and run it since people don't know what to do with it. Already in place are major venues such as the arena downtown Brooklyn. So they will course this parade through the streets of Brooklyn, juxtaposing these major accommodation centers, hotels, and so forth. So people don't have to get hassled. They can watch the parade from their balcony room. The city will take it over. And then they will move the whole thing off the roads together, all together. They'll put this parade, for quote, security and safety reasons, someplace else. Like the raceway. Out of sight, out of mind. You can jump up all you want, but they own everything that is valuable about this event. And you still would have accomplished nothing. It still will not be your own. And you will still be eating and drinking and jumping up and going home without having that moment in time creating the possibilities for future power and influence in your own city. I think it is regrettable that people don't understand the value of this so-called, I say so-called, cultural event, the power that they have in their hands, economic power and political power, the power to change things, the power to create new possibilities for their communities. I don't get it that they just don't understand that, or they don't act like they do. But mark my words, this is too good, too attractive, too profitable to be left alone. And I'm not even discussing television rights. The city is going to now undertake the franchising of something that people used to do for free. They will sell the rights to a television production company to broadcast it, and they have more than 1 million people willingly cooperating, getting absolutely nothing out of it except you're jumping up, you're having fun, and you are in amazing, don't understand it. Now, over the years, I've talked to some of the organizers about getting serious about this because it is incredible power. Incredible power. Leading up to the carnival, we should have, because people are coming not only from out of town, but they're coming from out of the country to attend this festival. Isn't that a good time to put heads together and discuss the critical issues in the Caribbean that could be helped by the Caribbean population in the city of New York, and in turn help Caribbean populations all across the country? So we're not thinking. We refuse to think. And you know what? When somebody else does exactly what it is I say will happen, I predict it will happen. You will hear all kinds of howling. People will be mad as hell. Well, you have something in the palm of your hands that you do not appreciate. You do not understand the value of it. You do not understand what could be done with this power. Other people do. And they're not to be blamed for seizing the opportunity to make a lot of money. And they leave you dancing and eating and having fun and then going home to repeat it the next year. I started by talking about the congressional hearings for Brett Kavanaugh, and really, as we will see, so it's just starting tomorrow. Today is, they have to produce some kind of fireworks, although this is all expected. But today is a day that they open up, so they start off kind of slow. Tomorrow is going to be at least the beginning of the fight. Here's the thing. There isn't a fight. There is no fight. There's a pretend fight, to borrow Trump's favorite word. This is a fake fight. Because if the Democrats, in particular, seriously had objections, they would have deployed some of their best weapons way earlier than now. But they don't. According to the Democrats, they say that they object strenuously to these hearings going on, despite the fact that more than 100,000 pages documents relating to Kavanaugh have not been surrendered for this committee to study, or for the Democratic leadership to study, to formulate their questions and their probing of Kavanaugh during the hearing process. Well, you got to be a joke. That should have been the big fight Since last year. Certainly since the beginning of this year. And here we are. The hearing is going on. Trump has his guy. He has brought the Republicans, all those stalwart Republicans who even can't stand him. They're in line. They are sure that they have enough votes to give Mr. Kavanaugh safe passage. And the Democrats, what are they doing? What has Mother Dear, that's my term for Nancy Pelosi, she's the one who calls the shots, tells these grown people what to do and what not to do. What has Mother Dear decided that the Democrats ought to do with this nomination? How should they react? How should they behave? What tricks do they have up their sleeve to expose Kavanaugh if they believe he should be exposed? They have nothing. They're talking about Trump, how Trump is short-circuiting the process, how unconstitutional it is. Well, you know what you were dealing with. He came into the office that way. He remains in office that way. When the president openly can say to his Department of Justice, I want you to go after these people. I want you to go after that senator. I want you to indict these other people. And the nation just keeps tootling along as if nothing, this is not a big problem. And in a sense, we have to see this in terms of what historically is the purview of people who are concerned about the Supreme Court. And I've said many, many times, if you look at what is going on in terms of what people are interested in, legislators, the parties are interested in advancing and interested in convincing us are the main reasons that we should be concerned about the US Supreme Court. It's not changed at all. It has taken on a decidedly partisan tone to it. What is the candidate's position on abortion? What is the candidate's position on gun control? What is the candidate's position on health care? That's not supposed to be the way this thing should work. We should be interested in what is the candidate's legal position on certain things that are likely to dominate the discussion. It is in the lower courts that we really need to pay attention. The Supreme Court handles a few cases a year, a small number, and they get to choose which cases they will hear. But in the lower courts is where the slaughter is going on every single day. Every single day. People, mostly people of color, are slaughtered in the courts through prosecutorial misconduct, through judicial misconduct, through lawyers' misconduct. And it may be as simple a thing, at least to the people who think of the Supreme Court as having a higher level of relevance. They think, well, we're dealing with high-minded things here. We're dealing with the Constitution. Well, so are the lower courts. But you add up the sum total of the damage done routinely every single day in traffic court, in housing court, criminal court, state supreme court. You add up that damage, people who are wrongfully convicted, lying prosecutors, lying witnesses, lying cops, doing whatever they think they need to do to obtain convictions. People's eyes are not trained there, but they will have us believe the Supreme Court is like the be all and end all. We ought to drop everything and concentrate on what the US Supreme Court battle is about. I say no, not necessarily. It pales in comparison to the impact that the lower courts across this country have every day in the miscarriage of justice. That's where we need to look. I know that the women's movement and other special interest groups have been inordinately influential in deciding what should concern us about the Supreme Court and what should concern the Supreme Court. But I encourage you to keep in mind that the slaughter happens every day in regular court, in the lower courts all across this country. That's where the gross injustice occurs. And you know they know it. But there's a calculation that, and this is a racial bifurcation that they do. The lower courts are for Black and Latino people and poor people. But now you get a bit of class when you reach the Supreme Court level. Oh, yes. So they're very much aware of who is affected by decisions routinely made, either at the Supreme Court level and or at the local level and state level. They know. They know. So they encourage us to think about the issues that the other side faces. Because, of course, just like the president, whatever concerns him concerns all of us. If he's not having a good day, then we're not having a good day. It's in the same way that the law operates. The power elite is taking care of itself and its business. And the rest of us just have to find the best way out of the predicaments that we land in, many, many times, not of our own cause. Well, I'm going to pause. I'm going to take a little break. We should have some time for some questions. We do for a few questions today. 888-874-4888. Let's take the short break and come back to your thoughts about the topics I'm discussing today. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and there's time for you to ask a question or make a comment on the issues I've discussed today. Jose from Rosedale, you have the pleasure of starting us off.
Greetings, my professor. I know we're pressed for time, so I'm going to move real fast. In light of the comments that you have made about Minister Farrakhan, I was tuned to the television station. I was watching the funeral of this great sister that has left us, and I was waiting to hear Minister Farrakhan, because I believe that this man was going to pull all of what was said there. I knew he was going to be the force to pull everything together and made real sense out of this gathering. And I was very, very disappointed. And when I got cheated out of hearing this minister, and I don't want to think that Minister Farrakhan would agree to be sitting there all this time in this audience and agree to not say something on behalf of our condition and the death of this sister. I don't want to believe that. And somehow I believe that the powers that be, for whatever reason, the fear or the just lack of courage of these people for not allowing this man to make a presentation at this funeral. So I will leave it at that. I don't know if it will come out anywhere along the way as to why he was not allowed to speak. But I can't see him sitting there.
Hi, everybody.
All the time. Getting involved, right? And
I agree.
Wait for him.
Thank you. I said, I agree. Thank you for starting us off today.
I had one last thing to say, if it's all right with you.
Yes, quickly, though. We're running out of time.
As far as the Labor Day, one day of just organized confusion that took place, I was there yesterday. I've been there for the past many years, not to ramage down the parkway or anything of the sort. I was there to make a statement. I always carry my signs. I have a huge sign of my picture of Marcus Garvey that I have, that I post, I tie it against the police barricade. I have other signs. I have one sign that says 51 years of fit and bacchanal, and still our consciousness remains dormant. And up you mighty race. I have another one that says, liberate the minds of men, and ultimately you will liberate the bodies of men. Honorable Marcus Garvey. The last one I had here that said, try standing up instead of jumping up. And while we bacchanal, they gentrify. And these are I had so many of these signs there, but I was like an anomaly on the parkway. Some folks come and look. I got more response from foreigners who came, look at the sign, they read it, and they took pictures of it, and they commended me and the messages and so forth. But our people, when I look and I saw the utter slackness, the madness, especially the young people, they were there behaving and doing things in front of us, the elders, as if we didn't exist. And I look at the raw energy of our people that need to be captured and focused in a liberation direction. And I was so upset as an elder that I my heart could hardly take it. But something has to be done. What you said about this thing, it is going to happen. This parade has been around, and not even a piece of land the size of a cigarette box is on Eastern Parkway that these people can say, we, out of that Ramajain, we have created this entity here where we can really teach the real culture and history of Africans from the Caribbean. And it is so sad, my professor, but I don't see us heading in a positive and progressive way. And I'm afraid that what you're saying is going to come to pass.
Thank you for your call. Jeff from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hello. I found
hello.
It very interesting. Yeah, hello. How you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
All right. About the funeral, I found it very interesting that the last Reverend Clay, whoever it was that spoke, was mentioned at least, I think, three times before he actually got up and spoke. And Reverend Al Sharpton pointed out, he said, he has the authority over these matters, because there was actually no elder Franklin that was left. Everyone else was children, I guess. But I think that he was the one, and it's not, I don't think it's a Christian thing, because Reverend Farrakhan has been invited to speak in Christian churches, and he has spoken in Christian churches. Other reverends have reached out and crossed the line crossed face and work with him, or at least allowed him to speak in their church. So I don't think it's a Christian Muslim thing. I think it was that reverend, and I think it proved itself when he bobbled his speech, because he was looking to make a national impact. His subject matter and his facts that he was trying to pull together just were hogwash. No, it was hogwash. The Klan only killed 3,500 people? Bull crap. The Klan is also the police. The Klan is also an extension of the eugenics thing. So he was totally way off on his facts, and I think he was trying to make a national statement, and it backfired on him. He was trying to outshine Minister Farrakhan, who would have put things together. Maybe not.
That's very possible that he expected, if Minister Farrakhan had been able to speak, and even the others were able to speak at length, they would have communicated an entirely different message and gotten an entirely different reaction. But you have all the small-mindedness going on, but it is something that we should look at and a question, because
it's not the time for it. And I think Minister Farrakhan, and no one would, I think on occasion, a lot of folks would have yielded their time to give to him if they said there weren't enough time to give to him to speak, because, you know, like I said, the Christian and Muslim have been doing things together for a while. I listened to his speeches, and I listened to him at the churches speaking. You know, so it's not, I don't think it's a Christian thing. I think it was that reverend who was in charge of that funeral service who made this decision, because you do not invite him to not talk about Detroit and Chicago. You do not invite him to sit on stage and not speak about the towns that Ms. Franklin held dear.
And not only that, on so many levels, Minister Farrakhan would have been far more relevant than most of the speakers. He's an accomplished musician. He's a classical violinist. He
Indeed.
Used to sing calypso, as a matter of fact, in his youth. He was very much involved and very close to Aretha Franklin in shared projects that they would work on in terms of community, building community. So it bothered me.
And that's why I feel that probably Bill Clinton got on to the speaking engagement, because I think of that reverend there showed me, pardon the expression, but he showed his coolness. I'm sorry to say it, but he's a coon. Just straight from his speech and the stuff that he was talking about and the way that he put it, and that he would do this at a funeral, a going home service for a woman, and use that as his political trying to gain. And it backfired on him, because the good Lord knows exactly what he's doing, and really bobbled his speech. That made him back.
And he took almost an hour.
He said three times, "Oh Lord Jesus, help me," because he didn't know what he was going to say. He had no idea. And listen, I've been in that situation where I've been speaking to people, and the good Lord has said, "You know what? You're stepping out of your bounds. You don't know anything about this." And he would shut my mouth, and he would not allow me to speak. So I had to say, "You know what? I don't know. I don't know anything about that. I'm not going to speak about it." But instead of that, his ego drove him to, I don't know if he was exercising some demons and some other stuff. And yeah, you know, it was taken care of right there on the stage. And I just want to say this about my mother, back in her day when we were living in Somerset, New Jersey, she created with a group of other people something called the Week of the People. And each day they had a lecture. They had an event, something going on, someone coming in to speak, someone showing you something. And at the end of that week was culminated with a parade. And we, you know, went to the park. They had music. They had dancing. They had food and all the stuff. The community came out. And you know, what they used that for was to talk about the issues that week prior to. And I'm saying perhaps not the organizers of the parade itself, but a separate group that is a concerned group of Caribbeans get together, and for the week before the parade, separate from it, but leading to it, have their forums, have their, you know, their issues put out, and then having a political agenda. And then, you know, at the parade, you know, yes, everyone needs to have a good time. We're under a lot of pressure every single day, and that's just a way to blow off some steam. But the little things, voter registration, pamphlets, little signs to hand out to make people aware of what to vote for, what to look for, et cetera, et cetera. But most of that work needs to be done by a small group of people and put it together and then perhaps come to the parade with it. And to look to see, like you said, to own something, you know, if it's going to be that way, then you know what, let's buy a hotel, you know, so make that a goal. Mm-hmm. First thing we do is buy a hotel. The next thing we do is we you know, there's public access. There's public access on cable stations. Let's put it on cable. Let's train some of our young people to work cameras. Train some of our young people to work sound. And then we can own the production. And we can take this and package it. And you know what? We can sell it. We can sell it then.
Well,
you know,
there's so many opportunities. But the city is waiting in the wings. The city will come in and do everything that we were talking about. And keep the money and control the situation. It will be the city's parade.
Then you move it to Newark, where Brother Ross Baraka is the mayor. Take it
That's
out
a
of
good idea.
Like you said, if you don't own a square box, a cigarette box in that area, you know. Yes, your vendors are making money, but if you don't own anything in that area, then pull up stakes and go. That's as simple as we have to
get serious
out there now. Exactly.
Thank you for your call today. Well, we look at tomorrow and see how things are shaping up, but my feeling is that it's a done deal. Kavanaugh is going to be shepherded through this process. There's really no resistance as such from the Democrats. It's shameful that you have these people ostensibly with so much power and influence, and their thinking should be so different. Their strategy should be so different. But there they are. They're not exhibiting anything that would make me believe that these are special people, special thinkers. So just get ready. This is what is going to happen. And you can see it happening. I mean, it is not something that will be a surprise. It is going to happen. Something so unconstitutional, when a president of the United States can order more than 100,000 documents or pages of documents withheld from people who by law are the ones who should confirm an appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the process is being rushed through. We get it. We understand it. And this is why I say we have to be tougher on the Democratic Party. This is unacceptable. It's not like, you know, this thing just kind of popped up out of nowhere. They knew that there was going to be a vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court. It was known that Kavanaugh was a likely nominee. And here we are. On the very day that this process begins, like I say, tomorrow is the real fight. It starts tomorrow. We find a Democratic Party very embarrassing. A very embarrassing representation of the Democratic Party. Thanks so much for joining me today. Thanks for considering my observations about these different things. We return to our regular programming tomorrow. Thanks again. Bye-bye.